Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is March 20th, 2018, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Holding Back the Years. That's so bad. Risk factors for adverse outcomes in older adults with blunt chest trauma. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Christina Shenvey. She is an emergency physician at the University of North Carolina. She's a fellowship trained in geriatric emergency medicine and has a podcast called Gemcast. Christina loves serving as the assistant residency director, writing things, reading things, teaching things, residents, and having kids. Welcome to the SGEM, Christina.
Thanks, Ken. I'm excited to be here and be skeptical.
Oh, great. So you've got your little skeptical hat on, ready to go.
Got my skeptical hat. I've been working out my skeptical muscles all week.
Oh, stretch.
I'm ready to go.
Well, I have to say, Gemcast is the best geriatric EM podcast I've ever heard.
Well, Ken, and I hope you're not just saying that because it's the only geriatric EM podcast, but I would tend to agree with you.
Okay, so it is the only podcast that I'm aware of that focuses in on geriatric emergency medicine, but it's still really, really good. Can you tell the SGEMers what was the inspiration for starting Gemcast?
Absolutely. Well, there are a lot of podcasts out there, and as you're probably aware, there are a lot of older adults out there in the world. And by about 2030, older adults, at least in the U.S., will account for about 20% of the population. But because they visit the ED more often, it'll be about 25% of ED visits. So a quarter of all ED patients will be older adults, which we mean 65 and over. 50% of ambulances coming in will be older adults. So we as emergency physicians need to know how to care for older adults in an effective, time manageable manner that also looks at things holistically. And that's hard to do. So Gemcast tries to create little bite-sized episodes of things that are low-hanging fruit, things that are important to know that might be different from the care of younger adults. And you know, some people call it the silver tsunami, although some people don't like that term. But because of the baby boomer generation and also people are living longer, we're just going to be seeing a lot more older patients. And some people use the term geriatric emergency medicine, or they talk about seeing older adults, or the elderly, or seniors, or as you mentioned earlier, more mature. And these all seem sometimes a little bit maybe insulting or euphemistic. So I actually loved in the abstract of the paper we're going to talk about the term that's used in French, because the abstract was also published in French, and that's les personnes âgées. And I thought that was so much better than our English words.
Doesn't it sound so nice? It just flows off the tongue. And that's because the paper we're going to review is from the Canadian Journal of Emergency Medicine. And so they publish the abstract in both French and English. One of the other things I really like about Gemcast is a lot of the podcasts that had started in emergency medicine really focused in on that, you know, that sexy stuff like resuscitation, ultrasound, Rebola. And it's just great that, you know, like, let's look at the demographics and start focusing and making sure that people are aware and educated on the research that's out there for emergency medicine in the geriatric population. So I think that's fantastic. What's the response, though, been to this Gemcast from the FOMED world?
Ken, wait now. We need to back up. Are you telling me geriatric EM is not sexy? Because you kind of put it in contrast to the sexy things like Rebola and resuscitative thoracotomies and things like that. But I beg to differ here.
I might have to change the theme music that you're bringing sexy back.
I'm bringing sexy back. Yes. Yeah, so, you know, I think as people see more and more older people coming to their EDs, no, diagnosing UTIs in older people is never going to be as exciting to talk about as doing a resuscitative thoracotomy while simultaneously doing transvenous pacing and Rebola on a patient. It's just not. But when it comes to your day-to-day business where the rubber meets the road, it's really what we need to know about.
Well, give us a case then that's going to frame our conversation today.
Our case today is an 85-year-old woman with a history of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, congestive heart failure, and diabetes. She and her 65-year-old, otherwise healthy daughter were unfortunately in a motor vehicle collision. So they present to your ED after this motor vehicle collision in which they rear-ended a stationary car. They were both, unfortunately, unrestrained They came in with a Glasgow Coma Scale of 15, and on arrival were both complaining of chest pain. The physician in the emergency department has to decide what imaging to obtain and ultimately needs to decide the disposition for the patients.
Well, older adults who sustain blunt traumatic injury to the chest are at higher risk for greater injury severity for a given mechanism. Longer lengths of stay, loss of independence, and higher morbidity and mortality than younger patients.
However, you know, Ken, it's really not a homogeneous population. When we look at people 65 and older, that can include a very healthy 65-year-old, like my mom, who, sorry, I shouldn't really reveal her age. Sorry, Mom. But she's probably healthier than I am, versus a very frail 80-year-old. So there's so much heterogeneity that some older adults will do pretty well, whereas others will be at particularly high risk for adverse outcomes.
Well, Christina, I'm on the wrong side of 50. And when that happens, you end up going to these like reunions. And when you get to the reunions, sometimes you realize it's not the years, it's also the miles, or in our case, the kilometers. And so not every person at the same age will be the same kind of patient that you have. So I think that's great talking about the fact that it's not a homogeneous population. But give us a clinical question that we're going to try to answer on today's SGEM podcast.
The clinical question today is, what are the main factors associated with adverse outcomes in older adults with blunt chest trauma?
And give us the reference out of the Canadian Journal of Emergency Medicine.
Yes, this was from Sawa et al., Risk Factors for Adverse Outcomes in Older Adults with Blunt Chest Trauma, a systematic review. Canadian Journal of EM, March 2017.
And I do need to point out, one of the authors on this paper is our FOMED friend, Brent Toma. Let's run through the PICO. What's the population?
The population is older adults, again defined as age 65 and over, who have sustained blunt trauma, which they defined as, quote, blunt chest injury resulting in chest wall contusion or rib fractures with or without immediate life-threatening injury to the lungs or other organ systems.
And when they did this, they excluded a number of different things, and I'll include those exclusions in the show notes. Was there an intervention?
Not really applicable since this was a systematic review.
All right, how about the comparison?
The comparison was prognostic factors for outcomes of interest, and the factors were grouped into three categories.
Yeah, so the first category was patient factors. Any underlying feature, condition, or demographic present before the injury, such as the patient's age, sex, or comorbidity.
The second group was disease factors. So these are any risk factors related to the traumatic event itself, or basically the outcomes of the trauma. So number of risk factors, did they have flail chest, what the mechanism was, or other associated trauma.
And then the third and final category that they looked at was institutional factors. And these had to do with the hospital and the emergency department, such as the patient was seen by a trauma team, was there a multidisciplinary team, and any adverse events that occurred. When they were looking at outcomes, what was their primary outcomes?
The outcomes were morbidity, which they looked at things like pneumonia, intubation, need for intensive care unit, and then mortality, particularly in hospital or 30-day mortality, and length of stay. And they had listed that they were going to look at emergency department recidivism or rates of return to the ED, as well as quality of life, or loss of independence, which is defined as discharge to a higher level of community care than that from which they were admitted. But they weren't really able to look at all those outcomes, as we'll get to later.
So, Christina, maybe you're not old enough to recognize that joke about outcomes, because
there can be only one.
And that's from the movie Highlander. And so the residents, and I mean, the residents are too young to get all my jokes from the 80s now. So actually, after the first shift that I have with residents, a new resident, I get to know who they are and what they're like. And then I get a little USB key and I give them five movies from the 1980s that I think will meet their educational needs while on the service for a month. And it's sort of like flipping the classroom because, you know, we're going to evaluate this by the end of the month just so they don't roll their eyes or laugh politely when I make those jokes like, there can only be one primary outcome.
So, Ken, I've got to know what these movies are. What are these five movies?
The 80s, I mean, that is a huge canon of films. And so I pick and choose based on the individual student's needs.
That's very good. Individualized learning. I like it.
Not quite competency-based learning, but individualized learning. And so Princess Bride is on there quite often. Ferris Bueller's Day Off is on there quite often. You know, so there's some core concepts that you need to know.
Really core content, I would say.
Core content, yes. So like they're only mostly dead.
Yes.
Or Top Gun, permission to buzz the tower. Sorry, Ghost Rider, the pattern's full. And that's usually when I'm asking the nurse, can I run out and grab a coffee from the cafeteria and come back? And they look at me and say, sorry, Ghost Rider, the pattern's full. You got to stay and work. Okay, let's give you the author's conclusions. Quote, while blunt chest wall trauma in older adults is relatively common, the literature on prognostic factors for adverse outcomes in the patient population remains inadequate due to a paucity of high-quality studies and lack of consistent reporting standards. End of quote. Well, Gemmers, you're in for a treat. We actually have a new quality checklist for systematic reviews of prognostic studies. So this will be exciting. We haven't run through one of these lists before. There's 9 questions. So the first question, the prognostic question, is it clinically relevant for emergency department patients?
Yes, this is a relevant question because, as we've mentioned, not all older adults with blunt trauma will have a bad outcome. So the likelihood that someone will have a poor outcome after blunt trauma can help you guide imaging selection and disposition. For example, a negative chest x-ray may be enough in a young person, but an older adult who has risk factors for worse prognosis, you may need a CT to really accurately evaluate the number of risk factors, given the high risk of false negatives on chest x-ray. Or an older adult with lots of risk factors may warrant admission or at least observation rather than discharge. This is the first systematic review that focused specifically on older adults and on important patient-centered outcomes such as loss of independence and healthcare utilization, morbidity, mortality, etc. Prior reviews had looked primarily only at morbidity and mortality and had not really focused on les personnes âgées.
Oh, there, you're throwing that out again. So you know what? Maybe this will inspire Marcel Aymon, who does the SGEM Global French version. Maybe he'll do a French version completely in French, except for that part, and he'll put that in English. Oh, wouldn't that be cool? Symmetry. All right, question number 2. The individual study patients, were they sufficiently homogeneous with respect to prognostic risks for the outcome?
No.
The individual study assessment for the outcome used objective, reproducible, and unbiased criteria?
Unsure. Can't really comment on that one for sure.
The individual study period of follow-up, was it sufficiently long and complete?
Yes and no.
Oh, a bimodal answer. Yes and no.
It's really a quantum answer. It's both yes and no at the same time. It's in a superposition of states.
They told me there'd be no math, let alone quantums. Okay, so let's move on. The search for studies, was it detailed and exhaustive?
No.
The methodological quality of the primary studies were assessed for common forms of prognostic research bias?
Yes.
The assessment of the studies were reproducible?
Unsure at this time.
There was low heterogeneity for estimates of sensitivity or specificity?
No, and in fact, they were not able to conduct a meta-analysis to estimate sensitivity or specificity of various factors because of the large heterogeneity of the studies that were included.
So I guess for that question, it could also be not applicable, even though we normally do just yes, no, or unsure.
Correct.
All right, the final question, question number 9. The summary prognostic accuracy is sufficiently precise to improve upon existing clinical decision-making models?
No on this one. While the information is potentially helpful, it's not ready for creating a prognostic tool to help decide discharge, admission, ICU, observation, etc. It would be great to have something like the PORT score for pneumonia or the pneumonia severity score, which takes into account patient factors and disease factors in order to then predict outcome. So it would be great to have something like that for blunt chest trauma, but it's not quite at that stage yet.
All right, let's run through the key result. They searched the world's literature and found 13 studies that met all their criteria, representing a total of over 79,000 patients. There were 11 studies from the U.S., one from Egypt, and one from Israel.
All the studies that were looked at were retrospective cohort studies, primarily relying on trauma registry. And of note, one of the studies accounted for the vast majority of patients. That study included 67,659 patients. On the other end of the spectrum, the study from Egypt had only 39 patients, and from Israel, only 77 patients. So that one study accounted for the vast majority of the patients.
Yeah, I actually did the math, and it was like 85%. Well, there was too much heterogeneity, and the authors were not able to perform a meta-analysis like you mentioned earlier. However, the overall mortality in the studies was about 8%, and the complication rate was about 27%. They also wanted to look at emergency department recidivism and quality of life, but none of the studies included this information. I was wondering, though, Christina, can you just summarize some of the prognostic factors?
Absolutely. So patients are at higher risk of adverse outcomes with increasing age, increasing number of rib fractures, greater burden of underlying chronic disease, and if they required early intubation or had worse oxygenation on admission.
Yeah, I think that's great that you summarized it, because when you break it down into morbidity, mortality, length of stay, discharge to an institution, and then look at the three different areas, patient factors, disease or injury factors, and institutional factors, that's a lot of information. So we'll put all of those specific outcomes broken down by patient, disease, and institutional factors in the show notes. And if you even want more details, you can go and read the original paper, which we always encourage SGEMers to do.
So those were the most important factors that came out of the paper. There were definitely some other things that showed up and some things that didn't really make sense, such as patients treated at a level one trauma center had worse outcomes, which I think really means there's some unmeasured burden of injury or disease in that category potentially. So there's still some things that are up in the air, but those are the biggest ones that came out clearly.
Well, don't start talking nerdy without me, okay? So here we go. Let's talk nerdy. This was a pretty solid systematic review, given the limitations of the available evidence. And they did adhere to the PRISMA and MOOSE guidelines for systematic reviews and meta-analyses.
They also described various kappas, confidence intervals, contingency tables, risk of bias, non-weighted average of reported means, and other statistical terms to describe their work. And that is all I'm going to say about that.
Yes, you are talking nerdy. And that's nice, because I just rewatched Forrest Gump with my 17-year-old daughter. And she's like, oh, this is so cool. Can we watch it again? And she had never seen Forrest Gump. And that's all I've got to say about that. But she's often heard me say, emergency department patients are like a box of chocolate. You never know what you're going to get.
You know, I say that about transfer patients.
Oh, that's good too. That works there. See, so now you're understanding why I need to give a memory stick of older movies to the residents so they get the jokes. All right, so let's run through those five things that we wanted to pull out in the nerdy section. And the first thing was about their search strategy. They used an expert librarian. Love librarians. It's so good to have one that can help you search the literature, and that was fantastic. They searched two electronic databases and hand-searched the bibliographies of all the included studies. However, they didn't do a great job of searching the gray literature. They did not mention going through conference abstracts or reaching out to experts in the field like you, or of course, Chris Carpenter, and they also restricted inclusion to abstracts in English and French.
Although, Ken, how can you do a study on older adults without searching the gray literature?
Oh, you got that, did you?
The next factor is heterogeneity. The studies, unfortunately, had a fair amount of heterogeneity. Now, some of that is expected because what you're looking for is, by definition, the heterogeneity of the population to see what factors predict worse outcome. But you don't want heterogeneity in the measures themselves. So some of the studies measured risk of outcomes based on age or rib fractures in a binary fashion. For example, age over 64 or age over 80, or for rib fractures, less than 8 versus more than 8 rib fractures, which honestly, 8 rib fractures and over, goodness me, no, bad. While other studies measured the effect per year of age increase or per fracture, so the increase in morbidity or mortality per rib fracture. There was also heterogeneity in the trauma burden. The mean injury severity score, or ISS, of the studies ranged from 6.9 to 19.4, so quite different in the severity of injury. And then four of the studies did not even report the injury severity score, and several of them did not adjust their predictive factors for the patient injury severity score. There were also some problems with the outcomes. Some of the studies lumped their outcomes, including, for example, pneumonia, pleural effusion, and intubation, as one potential outcome bundle. Now, these are very different things. Having a pleural effusion is significantly different from having to be intubated. So this isn't quite as helpful or as patient-centered as we might hope.
And the third thing we wanted to mention was follow-up. Some of the studies looked at 30-day mortality and length of stay, which are pretty standard outcome measures. They did want to measure quality of life and loss of independence, like you mentioned earlier, but the included studies did not measure these outcomes. Both are very important patient-oriented outcomes and would need to be measured further out, but just haven't been the focus of studies so far and require more intensive follow-up. As with all systematic reviews, the authors were limited by the available published literature.
The fourth thing is study bias. Now, this systematic review did look at the risk of bias in the study participation, attrition, measurement of prognostic factors and outcomes, study confounding, and statistical analysis and presentation. Unfortunately, most of the studies did have a high risk of study confounding and risk of bias in statistical analysis. However, the study that had the largest number of patients, that 85% of patients, had a low risk of bias in all categories.
And the fifth and final point we wanted to talk about was the associations and strength of associations. All the studies included in this systematic review were retrospective cohort studies. This means we're only talking about associations between the reported risk factors and outcomes of interest. In addition, some of the studies did not perform a multivariant analysis. This limits the ability to interpret the relative strength of the associations across the studies. Christina, my hands are up. That's enough nerdiness. All right, let's comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions.
We essentially agree with the author's conclusions here.
Great. Give us a bottom line then.
Age, injury severity score, number of rib fractures, and chronic disease are associated with higher morbidity, mortality, and length of stay in blunt trauma patients 65 years and older.
All right. And can you give us a case resolution?
Yes. So for our 85 and 65-year-old women who come in after a motor vehicle collision, the astute emergency physician, who has recently listened to this SGEM episode, obtains a chest x-ray in both patients. They're both read as negative. However, his spidey sense is going off because the 85-year-old patient has marked tenderness over the right lower chest wall. A CT is obtained that shows three rib fractures. This patient is admitted, given her very high risk for pneumonia or other respiratory complications. She receives pain medication and pulmonary therapy and is discharged 4 days later. Now, I prefer the term pulmonary therapy to pulmonary toilet because pulmonary and toilet should never be in the same sentence unless it's keep your pulmonary system out of the toilet.
Agreed. But what about the younger patient that was in the MVC?
The 65-year-old patient has a little bit of bruising over the chest wall, but no significant point tenderness, no splinting, no respiratory distress, and no hypoxia, and had the negative chest x-ray. Since she is generally healthy, ambulatory, and her oxygen saturation was good, it is unlikely that she would require admission even if she had an isolated rib fracture. So she is discharged with acetaminophen and does well recovering at home.
All right, so how are you going to take this systematic review that was performed and apply this information clinically, given the available information that's currently in the literature?
It's challenging to know how to use this information prospectively. For example, the study's inclusion criteria included the diagnosis of chest trauma, such as rib fractures. That implies that they've already obtained some sort of imaging. But it's not clear, for example, was this rib fractures diagnosed on an x-ray, which we know misses a lot of fractures, or was it rib fractures diagnosed on a CT? So it's not necessarily as helpful as one might hope in making the decision about which imaging modality to choose or whether imaging is needed.
And another problem is that none of the 10 potential patient and disease factors for morbidity are likely to be modifiable. Certainly a patient's age is not modifiable, and hence the theme music, Holding Back the Years, which was suggested by Chris Carpenter, is not possible.
However, it is reasonable to apply this data to clinical care, primarily by keeping an awareness that patients who are older, have more rib fractures, have more comorbidities, who present with blood trauma, are at higher risk for morbidity and mortality. So this may be helpful to guide care in terms of what imaging to get or disposition and to be more cautious in these patients. However, there isn't really a clear cutoff for things like how many rib fractures are okay, how many rib fractures plus comorbidities are okay when considering discharging or admitting a patient.
So at the end of the day, just be more cautious in your care of older adults with blunt trauma. Morbidity and mortality is associated with increased age, injury severity score, number of rib fractures, and the presence of underlying chronic disease. How are you going to take this information and translate it to the patient's bedside? What are you going to tell that 85-year-old and 65-year-old?
So I would tell that 85-year-old patient that I'm concerned since you have multiple rib fractures and you have underlying lung disease, COPD, that you're at high risk for developing pneumonia or having worsening difficulty breathing. I think you should be admitted so that we can continue to make sure you're getting enough oxygen and that your pain is well controlled, and so that we can monitor you closely and treat you if you do develop difficulty breathing or a lung infection. And for the 65-year-old woman, I would say, we've performed an x-ray. We don't see any rib fractures. And since your pain seems to be reasonably well controlled with Tylenol, I would recommend continuing to take Tylenol as needed at home. But certainly, if you start to have worsening pain, cough, fever, or just feeling like you're having trouble getting your breath, I want you to come back in so that we can reevaluate you.
All right, it's time for the Keener contest. And last week's winner was...
Nobody knew.
Furosemide does not have a role in the initial treatment of pulmonary edema. It has a delayed action that is designed to work on an organ system that is not being perfused when the patient is under stress. When the fight or flight reflex kicks in the blood flow to the kidneys, it's shut down. Now, nitroglycerin and captopril provide an acute preload and afterload reduction, which both helps the heart to unload the fluid-filled lungs. And that sauna thing that was mentioned by Al Sacchetti? Well, there are two studies in congestive heart failure patients with Swan-Ganz catheters in place showing a drop in the PCWP when patients were vasodilated in a hot sauna. Okay, and what's the question you got for this week's episode?
Our question today is, what do the acronyms PRISMA and MOOSE stand for? And I think we should take either correct or most creative answers.
Okay, and because this was a study published in a Canadian journal, I thought it was really interesting that they had MOOSE. Anyways, if you know the answer, then just send me an email, thesgem@gmail.com, with Keener in the subject line, and the first correct answer will receive one of the cool new skeptical prizes. And just for a conference update, I am going to be strengthening connections at CAPE 18 conference in Calgary, May 26th to May 30th. Do you have any conferences coming up?
I will be at CORD, the Council of Residency Directors, and then also at SAEM. So I'd love to connect with other skeptics there.
Oh, great. I'm going to be at SAEM too. And it's my birthday. Yeah.
At SAEM?
Oh, it is. I'm going to be celebrating at SAEM. That's in Indianapolis.
Now, Ken, are you going to be reaching the 65 and older category at this year's juncture?
Could we just talk about my maturity? All right, stop. Just remind people one more time about your GemCast podcast. Where can they find it?
Absolutely. You can find it on iTunes, GemCast, G-E-M-Cast, or online, www.gempodcast.com.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on the S-Gem. Can you give the S-Gem tagline?
I can, but I'm going to paraphrase if that's okay.
Sure.
Say on, philosopher, what have you found? What weighty, abstruse tome would you expound? When you say yes, your colleague answers no, and thus the ponderous volumes swell and grow. And truth is something man may never know, yet seek. Perhaps not even this is so.
All right, so you didn't do the actual tagline that says, remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. But that was beautiful. Where'd you get that from?
Those are lines from a poem called The Philosopher, written by J.G. Woodward, published in 1945 in the Scientific Monthly. Dr. Woodward was a physicist and also my grandfather.
Very wise words, and I can see you get it naturally. It's genetic.
I've got the skeptical genes. What can I say?
Well, you are welcome back on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine anytime. Talk to people next week.